Chaitanya Rupadas, I help in organizing this course. I would like to deeply appreciate and thank you for the time that you have taken out and committed to take out for the next 6 days. This shows your deep interest in spirituality. For this course, the instructor is Grace Shubhilas Prabhu. I'd like to briefly introduce him. He holds a bachelor's degree in engineering, electronics and telecommunications. He also completed LLB specializing in intellectual property law. And he began his career with the Tata Group and later joined an international law firm in Bangalore. And later he quit that to join the International Society for Krishna Consciousness and serving here for full time, since 2005. Currently, he is taking charge of publishing house Tulsi Books, which has published many books under his leadership. He has done transformational work on relationship management, work-life balance for some of the leading companies like Aditya Birla, Mahindra & Mahindra, Hindustan Unilever, Edelweiss, Indian Oil, Mahanagar Telecom, and Blue Cross Laboratories. He has also been assisting business leaders as their lifestyle coach, conducting regular classes on spirituality and management to help them live a wholesome life. He also counsels and guides students in the area of leadership, overcoming failures, managing stress from various things in colleges like IISc, Bangalore, BITS Pilani, Goa, Jamna Lal Bajaj and Sydenham College. He is also the author of Ramayan, The Game of Life. Two of its volumes are out and four are yet to come. He's also preaches and manages the temple in Goa, and he's leading almost 700 to 800 congregation devotees there. Mm-hmm. And so he's a very dynamic person, involved in many things, and he has taken out this valuable time to take you through this 6-section course. So let's thank him, and also I would like to ask Prabhuji to begin the course.
Hare Krishna. Before we begin the course, we would like to offer a few prayers. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Utaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Dalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna. Very grateful to each and every one of you all for coming here, taking out your valuable time and deciding to experience something different. generally people like to spend their weekends in entertainment in different ways, and you all have decided to spend it in a different type of entertainment, which is not only going to entertain you but also will enlighten you. So this course is called as a Journey of Self-Discovery course, as you are already seeing it. And if you notice the picture over here, it's of a man sitting on the edge of a cliff, practically, you know. All over him there is quite a exciting phenomena, you know. Life is very much like that. And if you actually understand it, the next 6 days, you all are actually in this position, you know. So we are all sitting on the edge of the mountain, the edge of a cliff, and trying to understand life. So, just some background before we actually start the course. So, there is each session of these 6 sessions that we are going to do is quite loaded. So almost every session will require at least me speaking for 2 hours, you know. So it would be really nice if all of y'all could come on time so that we can start the course on time and end on time, you know. That's the first thing. So we'll start every day sharp at 7 and end at 9. And today being the first day, I'm sure many times what happens is that when people come for a course like this, because it's a commitment for 6 continuous days and you don't know what to expect, generally people are not able to take a decision, you know, whether to register for 6 days or no, you know. And you don't even know whether you want to invite your friends and things like that. So after the first day, if you all are inspired and you would like to call your friends and relatives, whoever you want to call, you're most welcome to call, because registration stops on day 2. Because after day 2, if anybody comes in, day 3 onwards, they will be completely lost. You know, because every day the course goes deeper and deeper and deeper. And by day 5 or 6, y'all are like spinning in a different world. So I would suggest that if you want to call somebody else, tomorrow is the day. You should definitely call them by tomorrow. And also, of course, because this is a very intense course and it's going to be an intellectually stimulating course, you have to really keep your focus on. Of course, I'll try to make it as entertaining and as light as possible, but still the concepts are deep, you know. I would request all of you all to put your hands in your pockets or your bags and take out your mobile phones and put them on silent mode or switch them off, so that you're not disturbed and others are not disturbed, and the whole flow of the, you know, I mean, some of these ringtones are so fascinating, you know. You don't know what will happen. So it's nice if you could switch off the phone so that you can focus. And also, I will be speaking continuously for 2 hours. So I would prefer, I'm sure as I speak, there will be a lot of questions is popping up in your mind. So I think all of you all would have got some notepads and pens. So please note down the questions in case you have something popping up in your mind, and don't put up your hand or don't immediately ask it, because the thought flow gets disconnected if you ask a question in the middle. And most of your questions will get answered during the course of the talk itself, you know. So you might have a question which may eventually get answered. So it's better that we ask the questions and discuss at the end of the session. And of course, I'm going to be here as much time as you all need. So even after the session is over, even after the question answer is over, in case you still have a question that you want to ask, you can... Sorry, that was a bad welcome. One of the sessions that we are going to do is, why do bad things happen to good people? You might relate to it. So even after the question answer session is over, we can still continue our discussion. So you don't worry. One more thing that you all should know about this course. This course is The ACs tend to get a little too cold at some point of time. If it gets too cold, please let us know. We can switch off one AC or something like that in case. The middle one, Chetrabu, can put off the middle AC. You can just see whatever. Yeah, she's feeling cold. It's right on her, I guess. Or you want to shift somewhere else? Okay. You want to shift? So you want the AC on for some time? Because it's hot. You can just shift this side. Yeah, this side it's warm. Yeah. You can just shift this side. I'm sorry, we don't have facility for shawls here. Maybe tomorrow you may want to get shawls. Generally, I notice people start getting shawls from day 2 onwards. You know. By the way, this hall is named as AC Bhaktivedanta Swami Hall. So the ACs are slightly colder. So this course is a course on the fundamentals of the Bhagavad Gita, which means that we will be covering in these 6 sessions the entire Gita in essence. You don't expect that you will find every aspect of the Gita covered, but the essence of the Gita is going to be covered in these sessions. Gita is like 700 verses, so it takes its own time. But we'll do the essence surely. So I'll just give you a small brief of the entire course and then we can get into day 1. So today we're going to do the search for happiness. Each and every one of us is searching for happiness. But the kind of happiness that we experience is something that is limited, flickering. It comes for some time and it goes away. So this particular day 1, is going to be talking about this topic. How do you experience happiness that lasts? Day 2 is called as, does God exist? This is a very logical and systematic understanding of the proof behind the existence or non-existence of God. Day 3 is a very introspective topic. This is called, who am I? This is probably one of the deepest understandings of yourself. Most people who come for this session for day 3, they find their understanding of life completely changed after day 3. Day 4 is a topic called as one God or many gods. I always say India is a market house of gods. Every day a new god gets added and there are many in the waiting list. So how do you understand this concept? One God or many gods. And day 5 is a day for which most people come to this course. Why do bad things happen to good people? So, the funny part is that everyone in this world feels I am good, and all the things that are happening to me in my life, the bad things, are not supposed to happen to me. You know? So many people just want to come for this session. I tell them, not possible. Because to be able to understand this, you have to go through the first 4 days. Otherwise, this session will not make any sense. And finally, day 6 is called the practical application of Gita in daily life. So this whole 6 session course will be like a jigsaw puzzle. So I'll be throwing a lot of thoughts throughout these 5 days. And on day 6, we'll find all these thoughts coming together and showing you a bigger picture. So day 6 will be like first 5 days will be more theoretical. But day 6 will be very practical, what you can do in your life to be able to apply Gita in your daily life. So Gita is not a book that is meant for only people in the renounced order. It is meant for our leaders. Therefore Krishna spoke the Gita to Arjun. He could have spoken this Gita to any sadhus in the jungles. But because he spoke it to Arjun, it indicates that this book is not meant for any layman only. It is meant for people who can make a difference in this world. And therefore, for each and every one of us who potentially can make a difference to this world, this book is a manual or a guidebook. So with that background, let us begin today's day, the search for happiness. The one goal that unites practically 7 billion people in this world, the one goal is happiness. Everyone, no matter how rich, how poor, how educated, how illiterate, where they are residing,
they are looking on, all looking out for happiness. For a poor person, he thinks that having lots of money will make him happy. For a rich person, he feels that being close to nature will make him happy. For somebody who is living in a village setup, very close to nature, he wants to go to the city to be happy. For somebody who is living in a small city, he wants to come to Bombay to be happy. For somebody who is living in Bombay, they want to go to America to be happy. For somebody who is living in America, they want to go to the moon to be happy. In America, there are about 75,000 people who have paid $25,000 to book their land on the moon. 75,000 people have booked their land on the moon. Can you imagine? There is an agency which is actively promoting and selling plots on the moon. So you can imagine how much is the quest for happiness. That means somehow or the other, people don't find happiness in the situation they are in now. They always feel that something else is going to promise me happiness. One time, this is one thing I wanted to tell you all. I will tell you all a lot of stories. But please remember, there is a reason why I tell stories. Most people remember the stories and they forget why I tell the stories. So please do remember the stories and do remember why I am telling the stories also. So there was a king, and this man, he wanted to know what really happiness is about. So he went to a sadhu and he asked this sadhu, please tell me, how can I find happiness? And the sadhu told him, you go out and you catch one butterfly and get to me, and I will tell you how you can find happiness. So the king went out to his garden and he was desperately trying to find a butterfly. He was running after butterflies, and you know how butterflies are. He got exhausted, and after a long chase, he just lied down on the garden and he was like panting. Exactly at that time, one butterfly came and sat on his nose. This man, he went to the sage and he told him his experience. And the sage told him, this is exactly how happiness is. When you search for happiness, it eludes us. And when you least expect it, it comes and sits on us. So essentially, each one has his own definition or idea of what happiness is. For some people, happiness is a perspective. For some people, they feel that happiness is available inside you. So it is available in silence and in peace. If you run behind it, you won't find it. And for some people, happiness is available outside you. Absorb yourself in work. In that work, you will find happiness. Jesus Christ says, seek and you shall be happy. And others say, stop seeking and you shall be happy. It's such a confusion. What exactly this happiness is, you know? And how do you find happiness? Before we start exploring this whole concept of happiness in the right way, I like to leave you all with a thought. This thought is after a story again. One time there was a small child, and the small child, he wanted to have a holiday from school. You know, children love holidays, you know. So this boy, he wanted to play a prank to get a holiday. So he came back to the school in the evening, and he brought with him three sheep, lambs. And he numbered these three sheep, number one, number two, and number four. And he sent these sheep into the school and he went back home. The next day morning, when the staff and the cleaners came, they found that all over the corridor there is sheep litter. And they started running around and they found three sheep. One, two, and four. They started panicking. Where is the number three sheep? And they searched all over the school. They just couldn't find the number three sheep. They declared a holiday, emergency, you know. One sheep is missing somewhere in the school, it is hiding. In life, this is exactly what happens to us. All of us have the number one, number two, and number four in relationships, in things, in facilities, in positions, in everything. But we always feel happiness is in the number three that is missing. And we always look for the number three sheep that is missing in our life. And in the process, we forget to enjoy the number one, number two, and number four that is already there in our lives. So many times,
when we have to understand this whole concept of happiness, we also have to understand that happiness is very much the state of your mind. So now we will go into great detail in understanding what is the science of happiness. So before we begin, we'll just have a quick discussion. So I'm just categorizing all the living entities in this world into two broad categories: human beings and animals. Now, whenever you categorize anything, you'll always find there are two things. You'll find there are some common things and there are some differences. Just like if you categorize clothes in a shop, you take a garment store and you categorize all the garments in that store into categories. You'll find some common things and you'll find some differences. T-shirts is like a whole common thing. But within t-shirts, there will be a lot of differences. You'll find sleeveless, you'll find full sleeve, you'll find half sleeve, you'll find, you know, different textures, different brands and so on and so forth. So in everything in life, as soon as you categorize it, you'll find commonalities and you'll find differences. So let us now discuss what is the common things between humans and animals and what are the differences between humans and animals. So we'll begin by trying to understand what is the common thing between humans and animals. Any guesses? What is common between humans and animals? Yes?
Both have souls.
Both have souls. Okay. Anything else? I mean, I'm talking about like ground level things, you know.
Hunger.
Don't go so hunger, okay. Anything else common between humans and animals?
Senses.
You're saying something? Senses. Okay. So, I want to introduce you all to a verse in the Mahabharata which brings out the commonalities and differences between humans and animals in a very beautiful way. This verse says, Ahara nidra bhayamayitunam cha samanya etat pashubir naranam dharmohitesham adhiko visheshu dharmena heena pashubir samanam. This verse says there are four common things between humans and animals. First is sleeping, eating, enjoyment, and defending. So sleeping, eating, enjoying, and defending, these are four common things between humans and animals. Ahar nidra bhaya maitunam cha samanya etat pashubir naranam. So essentially these four things we give an acronym as SEED, S-E-E-D, sleeping, eating, enjoying, and defending. So essentially these are the four things that are common between humans and animals. Let us just take each one of them individually and see. Humans also sleep, animals also sleep. The difference between the two is that the sleeping in human beings involves a lot of sophistication. The simple act of sleeping is, you know, preserved or presented in a very sophisticated way. So, there are beds that are extremely costly. Water beds, you know, you move a little here and there, you know, the water kind of adjusts to your, you know, body weight and things like that. And then there are beds, pillows that are us, that are made in such a way that it just adjusts exactly to your neck, you know, size, dimension, you know. I know one pillow that costs 10,000 rupees. This one bed called the Hagger's bed. This bed, you know, it's made in Germany. This bed costs 16 lakh rupees. Can you imagine one bed costing 16 lakh rupees? And most people who sleep on this bed, they don't get sleep easily. They have to take sleeping pills. Anxiety, tension, so much of, you know, stress. So this bed, it's programmed in such a way that you can experience the atmosphere you want when you get up. You get up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and you want to experience sunrise. You can program it.
You will see sun rising at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. If you want to get up with the fragrance of lotuses, you know, you can program it. If you want to experience mist, you can program it. If you are not used to getting up, you know, easily, and you want some really interesting way of waking up, there will be like a water injected right to your eyes, you know. So all that happens in this bed. But essentially, the precious human energy is channelized to experience pleasures that are easily experienced by animals. I was traveling one time on the Dadar footbridge, you know. There were like, I don't know how many lakhs of people walking on that footbridge that day. And I saw something interesting that I have never forgotten in my life. As I was walking, and you know what the kind of pace that people walk on the Dadar footbridge, people were like intensely running. And as people were running around, I saw something very fascinating. There was a dog right in the middle of that bridge. He was sleeping peacefully, absolutely oblivious to whatever is happening around him, you know. Trains are running, people are running around, the bridge is moving, and so many things happening, but the dog is absolutely peaceful. He has no idea what's happening around him. Human beings, that same sleep is so costly, you know. With all kinds of sleeping pills and, you know, it's complication. The natural act of sleeping has become so complicated. In fact, animals, they sleep not too long, not too short. They know exactly how much to sleep, you know. So there are some very interesting alarm clocks that also talk about the sophistication of sleep. This one alarm clock that, you know, when you touch it, the light turns on. And after some time, if you don't get up, the light, it goes towards the ceiling. You know, the alarm clock goes towards the ceiling. So the next time it rings, you have to get up to put it off. And then it goes further up. And then you have to stand up to put it off at some point, you know. There's one alarm clock which throws eggs. So to put it off, you have to collect the eggs and put it back in. This is an alarm clock that works like a jigsaw puzzle. Unless you solve the puzzle, you know, the clock doesn't stop ringing. This one alarm clock is invented by MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. They spent $5 million inventing this alarm clock. And this alarm clock, when it rings, it jumps off your bed and it starts running. And every time it runs in different directions. So till you, you know, somehow or the other manage to catch it and put it off, by the time your sleep is gone, this one alarm clock that bursts like a bomb, you know. And this one, it flies like a helicopter. And this is the best one. To put this off, you have to catch the neck and really ring it hard. You know? So all the frustration of you getting up, you can take out on the alarm clock. So the simple act of sleeping is being made so complicated and sophisticated. So animals also eat and human beings also eat. So animals know what is natural for them. Human beings experiment with unnatural foods. Too much eating leads to diabetes, obesity and so many problems. Too less eating, it leads to malnutrition, TB and so many problems. So essentially, animals, somehow or the other, they know exact balance. If some animal goes through some, you know, food poisoning or some problem, the animal knows how much to fast. So they have some kind of a natural system of curing themselves and they know how much to eat. So in human being, the concept of eating has been made so sophisticated, experimenting with so many types of delicacies. The Chinese are known for their interesting styles of eating. They eat anything that flies in the air, anything that walks on the ground, anything that swims in the water, and anything that exists in the world, you know. They can eat snakes, they can sip monkey blood, they can eat roasted snakes and whatnot, you know. There are MNCs that spend huge amounts of money improving nutrient contents of certain food items. There are hotels, like I was in Bahrain, there is a hotel in Bahrain where the entire hotel rotates. Why? Because you're bored of seeing out of the window same thing. So you want to change, you know, so there's a whole hotel rotating. So the simple act of eating has been made so sophisticated and polished. The concept of enjoying. Animals enjoy on the street. And human beings, there are intense struggle and emotional complexities to fulfill this concept of enjoying. Animals follow the laws of nature to fulfill their bodily demands. But human beings exploit the body and squeeze it to the limit to derive some pleasure. They risk health, they risk emotional disturbances and so many diseases. So essentially, have you ever seen a dog sitting on one corner of the street and thinking, "Chhod ke chale gaye mujhe"? Went into depression, my girlfriend left me, you know. You don't find all that happening, you know. So essentially, this whole concept of enjoyment in a human society is so complicated, and the film industry makes it even more complicated, you know. With all these, you know, love triangles and love quadrangles and whatnot, you know. Defense is something that animals also do and humans also do. Animals use their claws, nails, teeth, you know, horns, whatever they are equipped with nature to defend. But human beings, the concept of defending is such an intense concept. Metal detectors, locks, insurances, you know, and all kinds of security systems. Human species is the only species that is systematically destroying itself. And the need for protection is so intense in today's time and age. I remember many years back, I'd gone to somebody's house to stay. And the next day morning, I wanted to go out to the temple for the morning program. I got up very early in the morning and I was walking out. And as I was walking out of the house, nobody had got up. So I tried to open the door. I opened about 5 or 6 locks. I still couldn't open the door. There were almost 20 locks on the door. I got completely fed up. I went and slept again, you know. So, this concept of defense is so intense in the human society because for somebody whose needs are not met, there is something that can be done to meet needs. But to meet wants, there is no end to it. Therefore, there is so much threat and so much insecurity. I was in South Africa, and I'll tell you something hilarious, just to give you an understanding of what kind of protection system that exists over there. Johannesburg is supposed to be the crime capital of the world, you know, and over there are roads where there are boards, just like we have no parking boards. They have boards over there that say hijacking hotspot. That means if you stand anywhere in that area, you can get hijacked, you know. Can you imagine? All over the country, there are boards that say hijacking hotspot. To the extent, police stations have private security. Can you imagine? If police station has private security, who is going to rely on police people? So, animals use simple things for defense. And human beings have such a sophistication for defending. So animals, all their intelligence that they have, they only use it for the seed. Sleeping, eating, enjoying and defending. How to sleep better, how to eat better, how to enjoy better and how to defend better. All the intelligence of animals is, it goes into these four things. One time in our temple, many of us, we found our hangers missing, you know, cloth hangers. And we were wondering, you know, we just thought that maybe somebody else borrowed it. We were just kind of worried. And then at some point, one of our monks, he saw something very interesting. He saw that a small bird, he was picking up one of the hangers and flying away with it. So this devotee just kind of followed that bird to see. This bird had made a nest with hangers. Can you imagine what kind of intelligence? But all the intelligence used for seed. How to sleep better, how to eat better, how to enjoy better, and how to defend better. So, what is the difference between humans and animals? So, the common things we saw are the seed. What are the differences? Any guesses? Okay, reasoning. So the first thing is, the difference between humans and animals is that humans have reasoning power, animals don't. Actually, if you see from one point of view, animals do have some reasoning power. Like for example, if you tell a cat, or if you observe a cat doesn't come into a house unless it knows that nobody is there. You know, it doesn't enter a room to drink milk. If it knows that nobody is there, it goes in. So it's reasoning power is there, but very rudimentary. Somebody might say questioning is the difference between humans and animals. Animals do question also, but all their questioning is related to the four things that we spoke about. Every day when a worm gets up in the morning, the worm is asking a question. Will I survive today? Will a bird come and pick me up? And the bird, every day it gets up in the morning, it's asking the same another question. Will I get a worm today to eat?
Yeah.
So practically, all that the animals can do, the questioning is very much there, but the questioning is connected with the seed. Animals also have the power to think. And animals also have what is known as logical reasoning. If a dog comes to you and you show a stick to the dog will not come to you again. It kind of knows that I have to avoid this person, you know. So there is some logical intelligence, though it is rudimentary. So then, if all these exist in animals also, then how is a human being special? This is something that is very important for us to understand, to be able to digest this whole six session that we're going to talk about. In fact, this difference between humans and animals, which the Mahabharata is introducing to us, is the fundamental of the entire establishment of the Bhagavad Gita. So the Mahabharata says, Ahara nidra bhayam aitunam cha samanya etat pashubir naranam dharmohi tesham adiko vishesho dharmena hina pashubir samanam. It says, what is the adika vishesh? What is the speciality that a human being has which makes him different from an animal? Essentially, there are four things that make a human being special and that make a human being different from the animals. These four things are known as potentials of a human being. And if these four things are utilized in the best possible way, then you are making the best and the maximum utilization of your human life, human existence. The first is known as A, which stands for ability for higher inquiry. B stands for bliss. C stands for choice. And D stands for determination. I'll explain each of the four. The first one is A, which stands for ability for higher inquiry. Essentially, animals use all their intelligence for the seed, as I said. But human beings can ask higher questions. Why am I suffering? What is the purpose of my life? Why am I here? Who am I? Who is God? The human beings have the ability to ask higher questions in life. Animals, all the questions that they ask are all related to the seed principle. Gautama Buddha, before he became such a great saint, he was a prince named Siddhartha. So when Siddhartha was born, his father, he met an astrologer. And the astrologer told the father of Siddhartha that this boy will either become the greatest king in the world or he'll become the greatest saint in the world. And the father was naturally worried and he wanted to, you know, make sure that the son doesn't become a renunciant. So he created a palace, and within that palace he kept all the luxuries and comforts that anyone could ever want. He never had to leave that palace at all. And Siddhartha, he grew up in the luxuries. One fine day, he wanted to go out of the four walls. And somehow he told his chariot driver and they ventured out. And as soon as they stepped out, Siddhartha, at some point, he came up and he saw that there was a man who was coughing like anything. Really coughing. So Siddhartha was shocked because he had never seen somebody cough like that. He had never seen somebody in that state. He asked the chariot driver, what is this? The chariot driver said, this is sickness. Siddhartha said, why is he sick? Chariot driver said, everybody gets sick at some point of time. Even you have to get sick. And then they went further. At a certain point, Siddhartha, he saw a man who was old, extremely old. His skin was all wrinkled and shriveled up. His teeth had all fallen down. He had no hair. He was bent down, walking with a stick. Siddhartha asked him, what is this? And the chariot driver said, this is old age. All of us have to go through this. Even you will become old one day. And then after some time, they went further and he saw that there was one man lying on the stretcher and there were four people carrying him. Siddhartha said, why are these four people carrying this fellow? Why is he sleeping? And the chariot driver said, this is death. Each one of us have to go through this. So Siddhartha, when he saw all these situations, he started asking questions. And as he asked, as he inquired, he found solutions to the problems that he was seeing. You will never ever find a dog looking up at the sky and thinking, what are so many stars doing, you know? You will never ever find a dog wondering about the, you know, great wonders of nature, mystic things in nature. A human being does. At some point of time or the other, every human being has wondered about creation. Every human being has wondered about the purpose of his life. The Vedic aphorism says, it actually begins with a aphorism. It says, Atatho Brahma Jigyasa. Now that you have got a human form of life, ask. Jigyasa. Brahma Jigyasa means inquire about higher things in life. Therefore, the scriptures, the Niti says, Asatoma Sadgamaya, Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amrutam Gamaya. So the whole point of elevating oneself from a lower consciousness to higher consciousness is a human state. If you have ever visited a butcher shop, you'll understand this. If you go to a shop of a butcher, you will always find this very typical scene, you know. There are carcasses of goats hanging and then there will be one goat standing outside eating grass. That goat who is standing outside eating grass, even once it never looks up. It never once even thinks, what happened to the fellow who went ahead of me? He doesn't have the capacity and the, you know, intelligence and even the desire to know what is going to happen 10 minutes down the line. It's focused on the seed. So human being is different because he has the ability for higher inquiry. The second thing which makes a human being special is the concept of bliss. So the scriptures give two understandings of the word happiness. So Sanskrit is a language of variety. In English, you don't have that kind of variety to explain deep concepts. In Sanskrit, there are two words that describe depths of happiness. One is called as sukha and the other is called as ananda. Sukha means that happiness which is flickering, lasts for some time. So the definition of sukha is the happiness between two miseries is called as sukha. That means I am miserable now. 10 minutes later, I am going to be miserable. In between, what I get is known as happiness or sukha. Just like in the olden times when the kings would punish criminals, what they would do is that they would catch a criminal, dunk him into water, into like a tank of water. And when this person is just on the verge of dying, they would pull him out. And his flow is like, breathe, you know. And after a few seconds, they would dunk him in again. So what is sukha? Sukha is that few moments of breath that you get when you are out between two miseries, you know. So in this world, all the happiness that we experience is the gap between two miseries, essentially. Ananda is something higher. Ananda means bliss. And here, ananda doesn't depend on anything external. Sukha depends on external things for you to experience happiness. Availability of something may make you happy and non-availability may make you sad. Ananda doesn't depend on any external things. It depends on the internal state of your heart. So ananda is a happiness that comes from within. It awakens from within. And therefore, the difference between humans and animals is that, the second difference is that animals don't have the capacity to experience bliss. So there are four types of bliss, or four levels of bliss that I will just quickly mention. You will not understand exactly what this means at this point of time now, but on day 6 you will crystal clear understand it. So it's good to see what you can experience later, you know, just kind of a small trailer. So there are four types of bliss. The first type of bliss is known as jadaras, or physical pleasures. So this is also known as parthivaras. So essentially, physical pleasures, it means that if you have unlimited, parthivaras is higher than the pleasures that we experience in today's time. And very, very few people can actually experience parthivaras. Because what is the meaning of parthivaras? Parthivaras essentially means that when you have unlimited resources to enjoy and unlimited ability to enjoy, then only you can experience parthivaras. Today, we may have unlimited ability to enjoy, but we may not have unlimited resources. Somebody may have unlimited resources, but you don't have unlimited ability. Like somebody may be a hotel owner of a hotel, you know, 5-star hotel or whatever, dhaba, whatever. So he may be a owner of a hotel, but if he has digestive problem, what is the use of owning the hotel, you know? He can't eat rice dal, he can't eat khichdi also. No point in owning a hotel. So you may have facility, but you may not have ability. So parthivaras means physical pleasures. Higher than parthivaras is known as swargiyaras. Swargiyaras essentially means emotional pleasures. So essentially, the concept of swargiyaras is that you do your duty nicely now, eventually there is a type of happiness that is waiting for you, that is unlimited. So essentially, animals don't have the capacity to experience emotional pleasure at all. So in this, at this level, as I was saying, that happiness is a state of the mind. So human beings have the ability to experience greater pleasure if they have greater emotional stability. Higher than emotional pleasure or swargiyaras is a concept known as Brahman ras. This is known as intellectual pleasure. So, when you totally absorb your intelligence on a spiritual platform, you can eradicate all your material desires. This is a much higher level of pleasure, which is known as mukti or Brahman ras. And higher than this, the fourth level is known as bhakti ras. Bhakti ras is spiritual pleasure. It is explained that if Brahman ras is like an ocean, or rather, if bhakti ras is like an ocean, Brahman ras is like a drop in that ocean. That is the difference in magnitude of this type of, the fourth type of pleasure. So bhakti ras or spiritual pleasure is higher than the pleasures of the body, higher than the pleasures of the mind, and higher than the pleasures of the intelligence. So this concept of pleasure is something that all of us can experience. So for experiencing the first three, parthivaras, swargiyaras, and brahmanras, you can't experience it in this world. You have to experience it in a different world. But the last one, bhaktiras, which is the highest amount of pleasure, you can experience it here and now. And that's what we will discuss on day 6. How to experience this level of pleasure. And that is something that is a speciality or a potential of human being. Animals don't have the ability to experience these levels of pleasures. The third thing is known as choice. Animals are programmed. They cannot choose. They act by instincts. They have no free will. They have no freedom, and they have no choice. You will never find a tiger one day deciding, thinking, you know, aaj vegetarian monkey dekhte hai, kaisa lagta hai, hai ki nahi? You will not find a cow saying, roj roj ghas kaake pak gaya, aaj thoda non-veg khate hai. You don't find that happening ever, you know. Animals are just programmed to function in a certain way. Animals just act based on instincts. But a human being has something known as a free will based on which he can choose. One time there was a man who was taking his dog for a walk. And as he was taking his dog for a walk, he brought this is a brand new dog that he had bought. He was like really proud of this dog. And as he was taking his dog for a walk, another man just walked by and he passed a comment. You know how people are. Sometimes you just pass a comment randomly. So this one just passed a comment. He said, "Why are you taking a donkey for a walk?" This man got so angry. He said, "You fool, can't you see it's not a donkey, it's a dog?" This man said, "Relax. I was not talking to you, I was talking to your dog." The dog didn't react at all. So human beings have a tendency to use their free will, and they have to use it very carefully. One time there was a saint who was walking, and one man came up to this saint and he gave him a lot of bad words, really abused him with so many bad filthy words. And the saint just kept quiet. He didn't say anything at all. And there was a friend of this who was walking along with the saint, and he asked him, "Why didn't you retaliate? He said so many bad things about you. Why didn't you say even one word?" And the saint said, "Suppose I give you 10,000 rupees and you don't take it. With whom will it remain? With me. Similarly, he gave me so many bad words, but I didn't take it. With whom it remained? With him." So human beings have the capacity to think differently. They have the capacity, the freedom to choose their responses. Animals don't have the capacity to choose the responses. They are programmed. One time, there was a man who went to, he met a very, very bad person. This man was totally a derelict, practically it. Abused his life completely. All the time drinking, all the time smoking, and practically not working at all. And he just wasted his life. This man asked him, "Why are you doing like this? Why are you wasting your life like this?" And this man said, "I learned this from my father. My father was a drunkard. My father just wasted his life all, you know, and whatever I saw from my father, I learned. That's how I am." So this man went ahead and he met another very responsible police officer. And this police officer was like really, trying to upgrade society, really trying to help people come out from their problems. So this man went and asked this police officer, "Why are you so good? How are you so responsible?" The police officer said, "I learned this from my father." So he said, "My father was a drunkard. My father was absolutely wasting his time. He never did anything in his life. Whenever I saw him, I realized I don't want to be like him." And interestingly, both of them were sons of the same father. One son learned to be like the father, and one son learned how not to be like the father. So essentially, humans have this capacity to choose their responses. Humans have the capacity to choose how they want to live their lives. So we need to take responsibility for our actions. Only then we can transform our lives. To the degree we blame and accuse others or situations around us, to that degree we are empowering those situations on those people. To that degree we are handing over the remote control of our life to others. They press one button and you get angry. They press one button and you get sad, you know. So essentially, human beings have to start living, understanding the fact that they have a higher potential of making the right choices. And finally, D, which stands for determination. Determination to do the A, B and C. So essentially, till now we saw that the difference between the common things between humans and animals are seed, which stands for sleeping, eating, enjoying and defending. And the potentials or the differences between humans and animals are A, B, C, D, which stands for ability for higher inquiry, the ability to experience bliss, C, which stands for making the right choices, and D, which stands for determination to follow the A, B and C. So essentially, when we live a life based on just do it, what does the meaning of just do it? Just do it means don't think, do it. So most people live a life like this. Just do it. And after doing, think if it is right or wrong. So most people think after speaking. What's the point? What's the point in doing something and then thinking? Therefore, we have to understand there is something called as a reaction, or rather reactive ability, and there is something called as a responsive ability. So instead of reacting to anything, we need to learn to respond to everything that happens in our life. Reacting means we don't think, we act impulsively. And that's how an animalistic mindset works. And responsive means we think before acting. In fact, the Mahabharata introduces a very interesting concept. It says, Ahara nidra bhayamaitunam cha samanyetar pashubir naranam dharmohitesham adhiko vishesho dharmena heena pashubir samanam. So the Mahabharata, it says that those who do not use these potentials and those who do not act in a way that a responsible human being is supposed to act like, the Mahabharata calls them, in a very interesting, Sanskrit is a very sweet language. Even if you give a person bad word, he'll be happy, you know. Sanskrit uses the word dvipada pashu. Dvipada pashu essentially means two-legged animal. If you say two-legged animal in Hindi, or sorry, in English, it sounds very bad, you know. But if you say dvipada pashu, people feel very happy, you know, kuch to achha bola. So essentially, the Mahabharata, by the way, I am not saying this, you know, the Mahabharata is saying this. So if one does not explore the potential as a human being, he is simply a sophisticated, polished, two-legged animal. Human life is meant for something higher. In Sanskrit, there is a word known as Kripana. Kripana means miser, kanjus. Who is a kanjus? Kanjus means he has a lot, but he doesn't want to use what he has. That is called Kripana. The Gita uses the word Karpanya Dosha Pahata Svabhava. Karpanya Dosha means somebody who is not utilizing the potential of a human being in the best possible way. So, a person who is a very rich man. There was one man who was extremely rich but extremely miserly. He was on his deathbed. He told his wife that when I die, in my coffin, along with my body, you put all the cash that I have. Remove everything from the bank and put it in my coffin. I'll take it to next life. So his wife said, okay, no problem. And this fellow died. And when he died, she didn't put cash, she put check. In cash it next life, you know. So somebody was a miser, he doesn't utilize what he has. He leaves behind everything that he has. So human being is a miser if he does not utilize the potential of being human. If he does not utilize the potential which makes him special compared to the animals, then he is called as dvipada pashu, a sophisticated, polished, two-legged animal. In fact, a human being can become worse also. One time there was a zoo, and in the zoo, there were like many, many cages of, you know, hundreds of varieties of animals. And the last cage was the biggest cage, and there was a board on top which said, the most dangerous animal. And there were like hundreds of people standing outside, you know, to find out what is the most dangerous animal. And this cage was empty. And when people looked inside the cage, they saw there was a huge mirror. That's it. And that's when they realized, who is the most dangerous animal? Human being. If anybody has come to begin the inquiry, utilizing the ability for higher inquiry, from that moment onwards, you are shifting. So essentially, all of us, the very fact that we have decided to take out 6 consecutive days of our life, 6 important evenings of our life, to inquire about higher things, itself shows that you will have desperate desire to understand the potentials of a human being. And in fact, if a human being doesn't use his potentials, he becomes worse than an animal. Have you ever seen animals taking sleeping pills? Have you ever seen animals experiencing all these things? Threat, scarcity, heartbreaks, going through stress management courses, you know, fighting addictions, committing suicide, you know. And even if nowadays you find animals also committing suicide, it seems. That's what I heard, you know. After being associated so closely with human beings, what else will they do, you know? You expect that to happen with animals also. So essentially, if animals don't experience all these things and humans are experiencing it, that means somewhere the humans have become worse than animals also. One time there was a farmer who won a lottery. And in this lottery, this fellow, he won a brand new sports car. This guy was thrilled. He was extremely happy that he won a sports car. He drove the car home immediately. And as soon as he came home, he attached his plow to the car and he started plowing his field. Can you imagine? Sports car, plowing a field. It's too much. The funny part is that all of us are doing exactly that only. The human body is compared to a sports car. Extremely fast, extremely efficient, and extremely, you know, good. And a tractor is compared to an animal body. So there are certain capacities and certain abilities in an animal which, you know, humans have much higher capacity for. The ABCD that we saw, which is the potential of human being. But if a human uses his body, uses his facilities only for the seed, how to sleep better, how to eat better, how to enjoy better, and how to defend better, then it's like using the tractor to drive on a highway, or using the sports car to plow a field. So essentially, we have to understand that human life is meant for something higher. So with this, we come to the end of the first section, which say, so we'll just summarize. We discussed about how humans and animals have common things and differences. We saw that the common things are seed, sleeping, eating, enjoying, and defending. And then we saw there are differences, the ABCD, ability for higher inquiry, ability to experience bliss, choices, and determination to follow the A, B, and C. So if anybody utilizes the potentials or differences of a human being in the right way, that means such a person has really understood the speciality of human being. The next section is, we'll come to a very important question, which is the reason we're taking this topic. What is the goal of our life? In one word, the goal of our life is to experience happiness. What kind of happiness are we looking for? We're looking for happiness that is permanent. We're looking for happiness that is ever increasing. We're looking for happiness that is shared with loved ones. And we're looking for happiness that has a lot of variety in it. So if these four types are missing in a happiness, then that type of happiness is called as relative happiness. So there are two types of happiness in this world. One is known as relative happiness, and the other one is known as real happiness. So whenever we try to experience happiness in our life, there is something that stops us from becoming happy. What is that thing? In one word, what stops us from becoming happy is called as problems. So essentially, the two types of happiness we spoke about, if you want to understand what are these two types of happiness, it is like this. You experience relative happiness if you can solve the relative problems of life, and you experience real happiness by solving the real problems of life. Now you might say, oh, Prabhuji, you're taking us for a ride, you know. You're just telling so many jargons, you know. Real happiness, relative happiness. What is all this? So let me exactly tell you what these four things are with the help of an example. So what is a relative problem? A relative problem, in one sentence, the definition of a relative problem is, one man's food is another man's poison. That's it. So relative problem means, what I experience as problem, you may not experience as problem. And what you experience as problem, I may not experience as problem. In fact, your problem may be happiness for me. Like for example, Diwali season. Everybody eats too many sweets. So you get a toothache, it's a problem. But for a dentist, it is celebration. Dentist waits for Diwali season to come. You know? Why? Your problem is his happiness. So relative problem means one man's food is another man's happiness. Another man's poison. Another example is, suppose there is a very rich man who is, you know, having a bungalow in, you know, Lonavala or some place. So such a person living over there, so for him living in a city is a problem. So he wants to go to a countryside. But for those who are in the countryside, they are not happy there. They want to go to city. For them that is, you know, experience of happiness. For or rainy season has come, you know. For the umbrella seller, rainy season is bonanza. That's like big time, you know. But for somebody who is selling vegetables, rainy season is a mess. Nobody comes out to buy vegetables. So essentially, what is a relative problem? Relative problem means one man's food is another man's poison. Now, what is the definition of a real problem? A real problem has three definitions, or rather, these three things, if they exist in a problem, they are called as real problems. The first nature of a real problem is, it is common to all. The second is that, no one wants it. The third is that, no one can avoid it. So if anybody or if any problem has these three characteristics, they are called as real problems of life. Common to all, no one wants it, but nobody can avoid it. Now if you look at various problems in this world, just let us analyze, you know. What do you think are the problems of this world? Anybody? Any one problem? Now don't tell me there are no problems in this world. naturally, stress. So let us take one. So tell me, is stress a relative problem or a real problem? Relative. Some people may say, you know, she might say, I am not stressed at all. Well, absolutely, I am happy, no stress, you know. So somebody, there may be no stress at all. But for somebody else, there may be stress. First thing, it is not common to all, right? Any other problem? Natural disasters, he said. We'll take that later. Anything else? Good health, okay. Anything else? Pardon? Resources. Yeah. So some people may have a lot of resources, some people not have much. So is it a real problem or a relative problem? It's relative, you know. Some people may... So essentially, any problem that you come across in your life, immediately put it in this, these two definitions. You will actually be relieved to understand that most of our day-to-day common problems are not real problems, they are relative problems. To know that is like a big relief. Because most people, you go through any problem in life, you think that it's a real problem, you know. So let me now tell you what are the real problems of life, which are common to all, no one wants it, but still nobody can avoid it. The Gita talks about seven problems. First, let me not burden you too many. It's four problems that are called as real problems of life. The first real problem is considered to be birth. Now, as soon as you say birth is a real problem, I say, Prabhuji, come on. We say happy birthday, you know. Birthday is not a problem. Birthday is like happiness for us. So, let us analyze it first. Is it common to all? Yes. 100% it is common to all. No one wants it. That we will see a little later. No one can avoid it. That's right. You know, nobody can avoid birth at all. So, when somebody is born or when a mother is giving birth to a child, what do we call it? Do we call it labor pleasure? She's going through labor pleasure. You know? No, we call it labor pain. It's an intensely painful experience. It's not a pleasurable experience. Both for the child and for the mother. So when the child comes out from the womb of the mother, the child comes out not with a Sibaka smile, you know. I have come, you know. The child comes out crying. And in fact, if the child doesn't come out crying, the doctor beats it. Make sure he cries, you know. So essentially, birth is a very painful experience. And it is explained that when a child is in the womb of the mother, it's living in a cramped up, congested atmosphere. Now, can you imagine if you're put in a room that is really tightly packed and you have to hold your knees and sit like that for like 9 months? How would you handle it? Impossible. It's a painful experience for the child. In fact, whatever the mother eats, the child goes through trauma many times. The skin of the child is not developed when it's in the womb of the mother. And like when we have a wound and the skin is peeled off, that's the skin of the child in the womb of the mother. So the mother eats something spicy, pungent. It, you know, touches the skin. It's burning experience of the child. The child has no option. Every child in the womb of the mother is praying, he or she is praying to God. My dear Lord, please let me out. This is the last time I want to take birth again, you know. And then you are born and everybody is around you and saying happy birthday, and you know, they are like glorifying you and all that. Then you forget all those pains and then you think that life is meant for, you know, enjoyment. So essentially, birth is common to all. No one wants it, but no one can avoid it. The second is a pain of, which the second real problem is old age. Common to all, no one wants it for sure, and no one can avoid it also for sure, you know. What is old age? Old age essentially is proximity to death. The pain that one goes through when one is old, there is physical and emotional pain. Physical bodily pains and emotional pains of loneliness. People who are old, nobody wants to talk to them. Nobody wants to be with them. Nobody wants to hear all their, you know, this side of my body is paining today, that side is paining tomorrow, this half of the head is paining today, all kinds of noises coming, you know. So people just avoid old age, avoid old people. Why? It reminds them of the stark reality of life. One time there was a son who was dropping his father to an old age home. And as they were traveling, the father, he asked his son, I'm feeling thirsty, can I have some water to drink? So the son stopped the car, he put the father, you know, out, put him on a park bench, and he said, anyway, this is the last time I'm going to, you know, give him something, so let me give him juice. So he went and got juice instead of water. And he was offering it to his father started crying. The son said, don't worry, the old age home is not such a bad place, they will take good care of you. The father said, that's not why I'm crying. The reason I'm crying is because when I dropped my father to my old age home, I stopped here only and gave him juice. The son, he put him back in the car and took him back home. So essentially, old age is not something that is happy. People want to avoid it somehow or the other. There was one old lady who went through a heart attack. Somehow, you know, she survived. She survived the whole thing. And then she said, anyway, I'm in the hospital, might as well I'll do some plastic surgery. So she said, let do plastic surgery, make me look young. So they did a full-fledged facelift and all that, you know. And then she came out. She was looking like a 16-year-old girl. And she was crossing the road. One car came and hit her and she died. She went to the heaven and she asked God, what is this? Why did you kill me now, after I become young, you know? God said, sorry, I didn't recognize you. How much ever you try to avoid old age, you can't actually avoid it, you know. And the fourth real problem is, the third real problem is disease. The very word dis-ease shows that it's not a very happy state. Common to all, no one wants it, but nobody can avoid it. At some point, everyone experiences diseases. Nowadays, every second person having backache. You know, nowadays we find heart attack at the age of 20, 25 practically, you know. The pharma industry is booming because this is actually a proof of the number of growing diseases. Common to all, no one wants it, but no one can avoid it. And the fourth one is death. Death is by far the most painful experience. common to all. No one wants it. Definitely no one can avoid it. What is death? Death essentially means in 1 second, all that we are attached to is stripped away from us. In just one moment. Therefore, the pain is so high. I remember in my childhood, I had some kind of fracture in my hand. And they had put a band-aid. And this was like a very, very sticky type of band-aid. It has these dots, you know. And it had practically become like a part of my skin only for like weeks together. And then I went to a doctor and he was supposed to remove that band-aid. I'll tell you, I can still remember the pain. This man, he was so insensitive. He caught that band-aid and zoop, in 1 second he ripped it off. I went crazy. I went almost numb in the pain, you know. That's exactly the pain that one goes through at the time of death. All that, the body which has been a part of us for the whole life, all the attachments, all the resources, all the relationships that we have, everything in 1 second just ripped out. So naturally, the pain is very high. They explain the pain in the time of death. Anybody here has been bitten by a scorpion in your life ever? Put up your hand. Anyone bitten by a scorpion? Good. Anybody who has seen somebody bitten by a scorpion? One, two, very good. You must be surely aware, for the others, if a scorpion bites you, you are going to be dancing in pain all day long. It's intensely excruciating pain. It is explained the time of death, it's like 40,000 scorpions biting together. That's the experience, the time of death, the kind of pain. So naturally nobody wants it. And everybody tries to avoid it. I remember a few years back, in December, we have this book marathon where we try to distribute as many Bhagavad Gitas as possible. So one of our devotees, he was carrying a box of Bhagavad Gita and he was traveling in a local train. So he went to the church gate station to board a train to go somewhere. And he somehow or the other forgot the box in the station. And he went. When he went much further, he realized he forgot the box and he came back to pick up the box and he saw there was a big crowd and there was hundreds of police people with bomb squads and dogs and all that. This man, he just pushed everybody and he just went in. He picked up the box and he was walking away. They said, "Come on, what are you doing? Bomb inside this." So he opened the box and he showed them Bhagavad Gita, you know. He said, "They're actually time bombs. You read them, it works later." The point I'm trying to make is that people are so fearful of the concept of death. One man, he wanted to avoid dying. So he was a sculptor. So he made 9 statues of himself, exactly looking like him, exactly dressed like him, exact same color, everything. Perfect replicas. And he went and stood among them. The messenger of death came and he saw there are 10. He got confused, you know. Which of the 10? And this was all very happy. And the messenger of God, he said, "This statue has a defect." And this man said, "Impossible." And he took him away. No matter how you try to avoid death, it's impossible. It's just impossible. So these are the 4 real problems: birth, old age, disease, death. Common to all, no one wants it, but nobody can avoid it. That's not enough. There are 4 more. Sorry, there are 3 more. The first one is known as Adi Atmik Klesh. Klesh means miseries. Adi Atmik means miseries caused by the body and the mind. The body and the mind constantly harass us, constantly trouble us. The mind has a nature of making small things very big. Typically, all the fights that happen in relationships are over trivial issues. One time, there was a couple that came to me. They were on the verge of a divorce. I asked them, when did the first fight happen, you know? And they gave me a very interesting story, you know, just to make you understand how the nature of the mind is. So, when they got married, the next day the wife saw something, you know, that irritated her. She saw that the husband, when he was brushing his teeth, he pressed the toothpaste from the top. She told him, you press from below, why are you pressing from top? He said, no, I'll press from top only, you know. And then they started having a fight. Literally from that day, every small thing they were fighting about. Can you imagine what difference it makes whether you press from below or press from top? Is that a reason to fight? Is that a reason for to end up in a divorce practically, you know? So essentially, the nature of the mind is that it creates adhyatmic klesh. It creates miseries which are on a mental level. So the mind creates problems and the body also creates problems. The second type of klesh, second type of misery is known as adi bhautik klesh. You will not have miseries with the body and the mind, but there will be somebody in your life which will make your life miserable. Everybody has somebody special, you know. And that person is just meant to create misery in your life. One time I was talking to one man, and this man was telling me about all the good things that were happening in his life. He was telling me how he has the best salary, how he has the most cooperative wife, how he has the most obedient children, how he has the most fantastic home, how he has the best car, how he has the best boss, the best job. Everything was best in his life. He went on for almost half an hour talking about all the good things happening in his life. I was not comfortable. I was thinking, something is wrong here, you know. This doesn't sound like Gita, you know. Gita philosophy doesn't match with what he's saying exactly. I waited patiently. After half an hour, he said, but. As soon as he said, but, I realized, wow, Gita is not wrong after all. And then he said, but my mother-in-law. And then he went on to describe how his wife is useless because of his mother-in-law, how his children are useless because of the mother-in-law, how his, you know, job is useless, how everything is useless because one person, you know. This is known as adi bhautik klesh. Misery is caused by other living entities. If there is no human being that causes misery in your life, one mosquito will come. Make you flat. So the third type of misery is known as adi daivik klesh. Misery is caused by natural disturbances. Sorry. So again. So these three types of klesh that we saw, adi atmik, adi bhautik and adi daivik klesh, these are common to all. No one wants it, but no one can avoid it. Natural disasters, we have seen enough in the last few, you know, months practically, you know. Enough to prove to us that nobody wants it and nobody can avoid it. And it is common to all practically. So just quickly revising everything we saw till now. We started by talking about how we are special. We saw the common things between humans and animals, the differences. We saw the common things are seed, sleeping, eating, enjoying and defending. And we saw the differences are A, B, C, D. Ability for higher inquiry. Ability to experience bliss. C is making the right choices and determination to follow the A, B and C. And then we saw that there are two types of problems, real problems and relative problems. When we solve the relative problems, what you experience is known as relative happiness. When we solve the real problems, what is known as real happiness. We define relative problem as one man's food is another man's poison. And we define real problem as three things. Common to all, no one wants it, but no one can avoid it. And according to this definition, we saw that there are seven real problems: birth, old age, disease, and death. And then we saw three more: adi atmik klesh, misery is caused by the body and the mind; adi bhautik klesh, misery is caused by other living entities; and adi daivik klesh, misery is caused by natural disturbances. Now we will come to the next part of the discussion, which is how do you achieve this real happiness? To solve the real problems of life, then we can achieve real happiness. The question is, how do we do it? To help us understand, let me give you an example. One time there was a man who had a boil in his hand. So he went to a doctor to treat the boil. The doctor told him, he gave an ointment. And he told him, you apply the ointment in the boil will go away. This fellow went back, he applied the ointment, and the boil went away. The next day, the boil came in another place in the body. This fellow went back to the doctor. The doctor said, wherever boil comes, keep applying ointment. And this guy understood, you know, this doctor is not understanding the problem. So he went to another doctor, and the other fellow said that he has a blood problem, blood impurity. And he gave him a blood purifier. He took that, and the problem went away for good. So essentially, there are two types of treatment in this world for whatever problem that you go through. One is known as a symptomatic treatment, and another is known as a pathological treatment. The symptomatic treatment is also known as a temporary solution. And the pathological treatment is also known as a permanent solution. So to whatever problems that we have in our life, there are two ways to cure it. Either you give a temporary solution to it or give a permanent solution to it. Therefore, there are painkillers available in the market and there are medicines available in the market. So the medicine cures the disease from the root, whereas a painkiller gives you a superficial relief from the pain of the disease. It doesn't really cure the disease. The advantage of the painkiller is that it gives you instant relief from the pain. It is cheap and easily available. The disadvantage is that there are many side effects. It is not a permanent cure. And more than that, it can worsen the disease. So, the problems that we have in life, there are three painkillers or superficial solutions that are being offered to us today. So, the first solution that is being offered to us is known as scientific advancement in sense gratification. The second is known as speculation. And the third is known as superficial religious rituals. Let us take each one of them and understand how these are temporary solutions and how the world is trying to offer us not a permanent solution to the problems of life, but rather temporary solutions. The first temporary solution, as I said, is scientific advancement in sense gratification. In Australia, there are birds that are known as ostriches. Ostriches have a very unique way of dealing with problems that come in life. Whenever they come across a danger, a problem in life, what they do is, they put their head into the ground. They dig the ground and put their head into the ground. For them, the problem doesn't exist anymore. Solve ho gaya, bas. Humko dikhta nahi hai, to hai nahi. So, this world offers us the first solution, scientific advancement, sense gratification. Problem kidhar hai? Batao to sahi, problem kidhar hai? So, essentially, the moment we talk about birth, death, old age, disease, people say, hey, come on, don't be so pessimistic. Chhod do. Chalo, movie jaate. So, essentially, the world offers us, the scientific world offers us so many solutions. Fancy gadgets. What problem are talking about? So many things are there. Every year one new iPad is coming out. iPhone is coming out. Where is time to focus on problems? Right? By the time you come out of the charisma of the iPhone 5, iPhone 6 has come out. By the time you come out of the charisma of iPhone 6, one watch has come out, you know, which you can, you know, practically talk like a phone. Every month, every Friday, movie is coming out. Don't focus on the problem. Look at how much is there to enjoy. You go into the movie, 3 hours, you'll forget all problems of life. Just go and relax. Nothing else, new restaurants opening every week, you know. Best of foods. People come to Govinda's restaurant. Why? To forget problems of life. When people are in stress, they eat so much that they practically become so huge. Eating is considered to be a stress buster nowadays, right? And then the social media is always there, you know. Facebook, Twitter, WhatsApp, what's not, you know. So many things to keep you completely busy, you know. To think that you're making wonderful relationship, you have 10,000 friends, come on. You have to be happy in life. Who has 10,000 friends, you know? One man, he died, and there was a funeral ceremony, and this wife, she was very disappointed because only two people turned up for the funeral. She said, this fellow has 2,000 friends on Facebook and only two turned up over here, you know. So essentially, nowadays, there are people who have, there are agencies. If you hire them, if you die by mistake, before you update your Twitter, Facebook and, you know, other accounts, they will update for you. I am dead. Actually, there are agencies who do that. And then, there is no problem in life that a drink can't solve, you know. Why you think about problems? Just drink. You will forget the problems only. And then higher origin, drugs, you know. So essentially, the world is telling us, don't focus on the problems. Look at what we have to offer you. We have so many things to offer you, there is no time to think about problems at all. Forget it. Scientific advancement in sense gratification. Actually, material advancement doesn't provide a real solution. It increases problems, you know. In 1990, TVs were big and people were small. And now, people are big and TVs are small, you know. The problem is just shifting a little bit. The age of cell phones. Advantage is that it's always available. Easy connection. It speeds up work. Disadvantage is that no privacy at all. Health issues. Stress. You have to be all the time on call. Medicines. They're supposed to cure diseases. But along with that, they create side effects. So does the advancement, material advancement, actually provide solutions to the real problems of life? The answer is, yes, it does. But it only gives a temporary relief. It doesn't give any permanent solution. In fact, it gives rise to more problems. So the external razzle dazzle of this world impresses the mind like anything. So all the external advancement that we have seen, that we are seeing, experiencing, it impresses the mind. White hair, there is hair dye. You have wrinkled skin, we have facelift. You have body pain, there are painkillers. You have breathlessness, oxygen tubes. So every problem that you have a solution. But essentially if you see, they are not real solution to the real problems of life. They may be solutions to the relative problems. But they don't touch the real problems at all. So the material advancement is giving us a patchwork solution. So you tend to think that the problem is solved, but you're actually not solving the problem. Like there was one man who was following a young girl. He really liked her. He kept following her and he reached till her house. So this girl entered the house and he was looking from the window. And when he looked into the window, this girl, she removed her high heels shoes. So suddenly she became small. And then after 1 minute, she removed her facelift. So she had her skin wrinkled up. Then she removed her teeth. There were no teeth at all. Then she removed her wig. She was not a 16-year-old girl. She was a 60-year-old woman, you know. So essentially, all that the world is offering us is known as patchwork solutions. Yes, they do help as far as the relative problems of life are concerned. The scientific advancement is not wrong. But it is also not right to say that it is solving the real problems of life. They are not touching the real problems of life, but they are helping us deal with the relative problems of life. And they tend to make us forget the real problems of life. The second solution, or the second temporary solution that the world is offering us, is known as mental trick or speculation. There are many, many methods today where the world is offering us so-called superficial solutions to the problems of life. The first speculation is known as positive thinking. Think positively. No problem can be solved. No problem cannot be solved if you don't have positive thinking. If you have positive thinking, every problem in life, solution is there with positive thinking. Even if you think most positively, if you have a wrong map of the wrong city, what is the point? Will you reach a destination? I am thinking positively. Somewhere in this map, that house will be there, you know. How much ever you think positively, if you have the wrong map, you're not going to reach the right destination. Self-help books. Today, people devour these self-help books by the millions practically. So, yes, to help people get rid of anxiety-driven lifestyles and stress and so many of the relative problems that we go through, these self-help books do help. And we should refer to them when the need is there. But as far as solving the real problems of life is concerned, these cannot touch them. Then there is something known as laughter therapy. People come together and laugh, you know, and they feel all problems of life can be solved by laughing. So, one time a man came to a psychiatrist and he told the psychiatrist that I am extremely depressed, I want to commit suicide. The psychiatrist said, don't worry, I'll give you a solution and I'll not give you medicines. Whenever I go through depression, whenever I go through stress, I go to a circus. And in the circus, there is one clown. If you hear that and see that clown, you will forget all the problems of life. Just go and spend time in the circus. This man said, I am that clown. Can you imagine? You know, he is helping people, you know, deal with their stress. Who's going to help him deal with his stress? Every third person goes to a psychiatrist, which means every psychiatrist goes to other psychiatrists, you know. So essentially, laughter therapy, it may be great to help you deal with stress and the relative problems of life, not really about the real problems of life. Then there is something known as neuro-linguistic programming. So neuro-linguistic programming, it helps you reprogram the undesired part of your life. In some part of your life when you go through a certain phase of trauma. So these techniques help you erase that part from your memory, you know, whatever. So essentially, these may help you deal again with the relative problems, but they don't touch the real problems. Then there is Forum, Alcoholic Anonymous, so many things where people come together. By the power of coming together, a lot of problems can be solved. Yes, they do help us deal with a lot of relative problems, addictions and so many things, you know. So, how much ever positive you have, or rather how much ever people come together, 200 people come together and they decide, we will get rid of death together by the power of being together. How much ever you are together, you can't get rid of the real problems of life. And finally, there is something known as yoga and meditation. So, the concept of yoga and meditation today, yoga has become like a, you know, super hyped up name, you know. Everybody wants to do yoga. We'll discuss what real yoga is on day 6. But essentially, the yoga and meditation that we understand in today's world, it helps us deal with the relative problems of life, definitely. It helps us have a peaceful mind. It helps us have stable bodies and so many things like that. But as far as solving the real problems of life is concerned, it doesn't really help us. So, speculation or mental tricks, or there are so many of them that can help us deal with the relative problems of life. As far as the relative problems of life are concerned, yes, we can take shelter of them and we can take their help to be able to overcome the relative problems of life so that you can focus on higher aspects of life. Because most people who are stuck by the relative problems itself, they can't focus on the real problems. I mean, by the time you battle the army of relative problems and you come out of it, there's no time and energy left for the real problems, right? So we can use all these tools to help us deal with the relative problems of life are concerned, but it cannot help us solve the real problems of life. And then finally, there is the third superficial solution, which is known as superficial religious rituals. So there are so many people in today's world who are inspiring you to tell you that don't worry, all problems that you have, come, we have a solution. You'll go, if you find, you know, all over Bombay, in all the trains and this, there are, you know, posters put up. You have this problem, that problem, not getting a girl, not getting a boy, not getting a child, not getting a job, not getting that, not, come here, Baba is available, you know. So essentially, superficial religious rituals, they put off people who are intelligent. So people who are intelligent, they don't connect with superficial religious rituals. In fact, the people who perform these superficial religious rituals, they don't know why they're doing it. The people who come to attend these rituals, they don't know why they are coming. So many people organize Bhagavad Saptas, you know. Like one time, there was a man who was speaking in a Bhagavad Sapta, professional Bhagavad reciter. And everyone in the audience was sleeping. Everyone was like really, you know, people were like watching, looking at their watch, and they were like sleeping. There was one old lady, she was crying constantly. This man was very impressed, you know. Saying, wow, just look at her inspiration, you know. So he went and met her later. And he asked her, what exactly that I spoke inspired you so much? Why are you crying so much, you know? She said, your beard reminds me of my goat. My goat died last week. When I saw your beard, exactly like my goat only, you know. So those who come, we don't know why they're coming. And those who are speaking also, we don't know why they're speaking, you know. So essentially, when intellectual people come across such superficial religious rituals, they don't feel inspired. They feel that something is wrong here, you know. And therefore, of course, these superficial religious rituals may help us solve our relative problems of life, definitely. But as far as dealing with the real problems of life are concerned, they don't really help. And sometimes people who follow these superficial religious rituals are so insensitive, and they have absolutely so not really understanding the essence of these rituals. They're following the the shadow of the ritual, basically. Like recently, I met one family, and they were sharing me this. I was quite shocked, you know. They were saying there was one girl. So these people are monks of a very famous temple in Bombay, and in that temple they have a Shani deity. You know, it's a very famous Shani deity, and hundreds of people come to have darshan, you know, on Saturdays. So one particular young girl, you know, she would come in a big car, you know, Mercedes Benz or something, and she would get down from the car. She would quickly go into the Shani, you know, in front of the Shani deity, take a coconut and hit it on the face of Shani. Can you imagine? You know, hit it on the face of Shani. So she was doing that every week for 5 or 6 weeks. And then finally they found out who this person was. They called her parents, they called the police just to, you know, inquire. They asked her, why are you doing this? You know what this girl said? This girl said, one Maharaj, he told me I should do. For 12 weeks I would hit a coconut on Shani's face. They asked her why. She said, I am not getting married only. If I want to get married, this Maharaj said, I have to hit coconut on Shani's face 12 weeks. Can you imagine? You know? So superficial religious rituals, they end up putting off a lot of people. So essentially, all of us are wanting to go fast ahead in life. When I came to Bombay for the first time, about 10-12 years back, I was shocked because I was living in a smaller state. I was living in Goa all my life. And when I came to Bombay, first time I saw all over the city clocks. And the two by the second, you know. And people are like running like frantic. I have to catch the 428 train and 453 bus, and I just couldn't understand why there's so much hurry, you know. And I always found people running by the clock. So today, people live based on the clock. So living by the clock is not bad. But if you're running at a great pace, but if you're running the wrong direction, what is the point? Many times, people are going at great pace. You stop them. You ask them, where are you going? Hey, don't stop me. I have to go. I don't know where I'm going, but I have to go. So this mood of running without pausing and thinking, where am I going? What direction am I going in? Has become a disease in today's day and age. Human beings in the trying to win the rat race of life, they end up being rats only. You know, how much ever fast you reach a destination, unless you know what is the destination you want to go to, where will you reach? Every step you reach somewhere, you feel that's not my destination, I have to go further. So essentially, speed without direction is meaningless. Therefore, I always tell people that living a life based on the clock only is not enough. You need to have the clock which tells you how fast you need to run. But every human being also needs a compass to tell you which direction to run. And therefore, human life becomes complete when you run based on the clock, but run based on the direction given by the compass. And that brings us to the last part of this section, which is the permanent solution. I'll tell you a story to help us understand the permanent solution. One time, there was a millionaire father, extremely rich, multi-billionaire. This man, he took his son along and they went to a fair. And as they were strolling around in the fair, somehow the son got lost. The father desperately tried to search for him. There were thousands and thousands of people there. He just couldn't find his child. And the child was desperately searching for the father. He couldn't find. And finally, they both parted ways. The father went back home, desperately unhappy. And the child kept crying. Suddenly, as the child was crying, one man saw this child crying. And he asked him, "What's the problem?" And the child told, "I lost my father." The man said, wait, I'll help you. Don't worry." The man took the child and brought for him unlimited amount of gadgets, iPads and laptops and, you know, all kinds of Domino's pizza and, you know, ice cream from Baskin and Robbins and whatnot. He gave him everything that, you know, somebody could be happy with. And the child was extremely happy, you know, for 15 minutes. After 15 minutes, he started crying again, you know. Another man came and he asked the child what happened, and the child told. And this man said, "Don't worry, I'll help you." And he gave him a pep talk, full inspirational talk of how to be positive in life. And the child became really happy, you know. 15 minutes he was extremely positive. Then he started crying again. And then after some time, another man came and he asked the child what happened. And the child said, and this man said, "Don't worry, I will help you." This man, he sat down and did a big yajna. And after the yajna, he said, "Don't worry, all your problems will get solved." And he went away. 15 minutes, the child was happy. Then he started crying again. A fourth man came. He asked him what the problem was. The child told. This man took the child, dropped him to his father's house. The child became happy forever. So essentially, this is the story of all of us. All of us are like this lost child. We have a millionaire father who is God. And all of us have lost our connection with God. We are trying to desperately search. And then as we are trying to search, there is one person that comes and tells you, gives you all kinds of food, clothing, shelter and all kinds of gadgets and all kinds of fancy things and tells you, "Don't worry, you will forget your problem." For some time you are happy. At a certain point of time you realize, this is not what is going to make me happy. You start crying again. A second person comes and he gives you a pep talk, positive thinking. You have to have the right thought process and this and that. And then you're happy for some time. And then again you start crying. Because that's not what you're looking for. A third person comes and he performs an intense ritual. And again, that doesn't make you happy. The real solution is actually to go back to the real father. And that's when you will permanently be happy. So essentially, all of us are looking for happiness in our life. So, the point we're trying to say is that we're trying to search for the right thing. What is the right thing we're trying to search for? Happiness. But we're trying to search for it in the wrong place. So, most people think things in this world make them happy. First of all, things in this world, if actually things were to make you happy, people who have more should be happiest. In fact, we find people who have so much are the ones who are the most miserable people. You don't find suicide so much in the slums of Dharavi. You find suicide in, you know, multi-story buildings, right? You don't find people who have physical pain going through, you know, a desire to commit suicide. People who have mental pain of dissatisfaction, they are the ones who commit suicide. So essentially, there was a man who was trying to sell balloons and he had a marketing trick. So every few minutes he would release one balloon in the air And when the balloon would be flying in the air, children would go crazy. They would run after the balloon, you know, and they would come to buy. There was one small child who was standing next to him and constantly observing the balloons. He didn't have the money to buy, but he had a desire. So this child went and asked this man a question. He said, "Will the black balloon also fly as high as the other color balloons?" And the man understood the child's situation. And he told the child that it is the thing which is inside is important and not the external color. So essentially, in life, what really brings us happiness is not things and stuff, but the inner content of the heart. So essentially, we are looking for the right thing, which is happiness, but we are looking for it in the wrong place. Let me ask you some questions. What is a eating place, a place, a restaurant called in Hindi? It's called as Bhojanalai, a place where you get to eat something. What is a place where people drink? It is called as Madiralai. What is a place where people study? It is called as Vidyalai. What is a place where books are kept? It is called as Pustakalai. Interestingly, this world is branded, is named by Krishna in the Gita as Dukkalai. Dukkalai means a place which is miserable. And what are we trying to find over here? Happiness. So essentially, if this place is Dukkalai, is there a Sukhalai? Is there a place which is actually a place of happiness? That's a question. So essentially, if you study this whole, the boy who's connecting to the a millionaire father, we were saying the permanent solution to life, to get rid of the real problems of life, is to connect back to the millionaire father. We are saying that this place we were trying to find happiness constantly is a place which is Dukkalai, is a place which is permanently filled with misery. Is there a Sukhalai? That brings us to the next question. For there to be a Sukhalai, for there to be a father, a millionaire father, the question is, does God actually exist? That we will see tomorrow. I'll just quickly summarize everything I spoke today, then we can discuss. I started our discussion by talking about how humans and animals, they have some common things and they have some differences. The common things between humans and animals are seed, which stands for sleeping, eating, enjoying and defending. The differences between humans and animals are ABCD, which stands for ability for higher inquiry, ability to experience bliss. C stands for choices and D stands for determination to follow the A, B and C. And then we saw, for one to experience happiness, one has to solve the problems of life. We saw there are two types of problems, relative problems and real problems. Relative problem definition is, one man's food is another man's poison. And real problem definition is, common to all, no one wants it, but no one can avoid it. And then we saw that there are seven real problems in life. What are the real problems? Birth, old age, disease, death, and three more. Adi Atmik Klesh, which means misery is caused by the body and the mind. Adi Bhautik Klesh, misery is caused by the other living entities. And Adi Daivik Klesh, which is misery is caused by natural disturbances. And then we saw that to solve the real problems of life, the world is offering us three temporary solutions. The first temporary solution that is being offered to us is sense gratification, scientific advancement in sense gratification. That means the world is trying to tell us, don't worry about the problems of life. There are too many things to enjoy. We have created too many facilities. Forget the problems. The second temporary solution that the world is offering us is speculation. That means they help us with so many ideas and so many ways in which you can see, perceive the problems of a life. But essentially they are helping us deal with the relative problems and not the real problems. And then finally the third superficial solution is superficial religious rituals. As I said, because these superficial religious rituals are aimed towards solving the relative problems of life, they don't really cater to the real problems at all. And therefore, we saw that the permanent solution is connecting back to the to God, our real Father, who has so much. So we're trying to search for real. We're trying to search for the lost Father, just like the small child, trying to go through phases of, you know, scientific advancement, sense gratification, speculation, super religious rituals. None of them really satisfy us because none of them really connect us back to our millionaire Father. So we have a millionaire Father who has so much that we don't really need to work. We don't really need to hanker for anything. We have everything. But unfortunately, we are lost from the millionaire Father. And therefore, we're looking for that in all aspects of life. And therefore, we're looking for the right thing, which is the happiness that is eternal, lasting, and ever-increasing happiness. But we're looking for it in the wrong place. This world is branded, according to the Gita, as Dukkhalai, which means a place which is miserable. If this is Dukkhalai, then there must be Sukhalai somewhere. So next time we're going to take this discussion on, does God exist? Only if God exists, only if our Father exists, we can say that there is a place where there is permanent happiness, you know, where the real problems of life don't exist. That we will take it up tomorrow. So now, if there is any quick questions or comments, we can discuss for a minute or two. Yes.
Probably. So, what you notice, small children, they're very happy. They're stage 3-4 because they lack a simple, they actually don't think a lot. And you also notice that animals themselves, they don't get very happy during the race, but they also, they're not conscious of
correct
all the otherwise. So would you say a lot of the solutions to finding happiness is stop thinking so much?
It's a very interesting question. So his question is that, you know, small children are very happy and animals are very happy, you know. And it's also said, ignorance is bliss, you know. So most people, they don't try to educate themselves, they don't try to understand things because, I mean, like today, we were discussing about real problems, you know, birth, death, old age, disease. Somebody might say, Prabhuji, if I didn't come inside, I would not have known only, I was happy. Without knowing that 7 problems are there, you know. So now, aapne saath saath bol diya ek saath, you know. It's like an anxiety. Yes, ignorance seems to be a way to be happy. But the point is that ignorance, the bliss that one experiences in ignorance is limited by the fact that we have intelligence. So human intelligence needs answers. It is not happy to remain in darkness. So yes, as a small child, we are happy to be blissful. We are not bothered about, you know, whatever happens. And animals, they just not bothered about whatever happens because they are just absorbed. Unfortunately, we have intelligence. And unfortunately, intelligence doesn't have the capacity to be switched off when we want. So, most people, they have a way to switch off their intelligence. The way to switch off the intelligence is by absorbing in the temporary solutions. Go and watch a movie. Don't think so much. Drink. Don't think so much. Enjoy life. Don't think so much. Essentially, what we're doing by the concept of just do it is that we want to switch off the intelligence faculty. Because as soon as there is intelligence faculty, the intelligence faculty brings guilt. The intelligence faculty brings reasoning. The intelligence faculty brings so many things in your front. It's overwhelming to close your eyes to it all the time. Sometimes, yes. But it's not possible all the time. So there are only two people who are extremely happy in this world. 100% happy. One is a madman and one is a self-realized soul, you know, pure devotee. Other than these two extremes, everybody else is miserable to some extent or the other. I hope it answers. Yeah. Anybody else? Any other question? Okay. So real problem is a real problem. How do you deal with that? So essentially, as I said, this is a jigsaw puzzle. You will get another ABCD on day 6. The last ABCD that I want to tell you on day 6 is a solution that you need to do to solve the real problems of life. So essentially, we are not leaving you high and dry. You know, They're not only telling you the problem and leaving you, you know, without it, without a solution. The solution will come. But for me to offer you the solution, I need to upgrade you with a lot of more information for you to be able to accept the solution. You know, because otherwise, the solution may seem to be meaningless to you, or it may seem to be absurd to you right now. So, the solution will come. But yes, the fact is that there is a real solution. And that solution, that's why I introduced the concept of bliss right on day one itself. So that the concept of bliss, the human being having the potential to experience such happiness in this world, it's possible, but provided there is a certain way in which we live, there's a certain way in which we package our lives. So that we will discuss on day six. So if you don't get your solution on day six, you have the right to catch me. Anybody else? Very good question. Can the bliss be experienced by a diseased or old man? Therefore, I spoke about four types of bliss. On day three, you will have more clarity about what I'm going to say now. So, the types of bliss that I spoke about: physical pleasures, emotional pleasures, intellectual pleasures, and spiritual pleasures. These four types of bliss, the first one depends on external situations. The emotional pleasures, intellectual pleasures, and the spiritual pleasures don't depend on external situations at all. So no matter in what condition of life you are, no matter in what situation of life you are, you're allowed to experience the other types of bliss, especially the fourth one, the spiritual bliss. So you will understand this concept of spiritual bliss, or what is this difference between mental, emotional, or emotional, intellectual, and spiritual on day three, when we talk about the concept of subtle body, gross body, and the spiritual body. We will discuss that on day three. Okay, so we'll stop today. I'm very grateful to all of you all for your patient listening. I would like to request you all to please come tomorrow on time at 7 o'clock. Tomorrow is Saturday, by the way. And you have time at your disposal, I guess. So we can start on time and end on time. And those who have questions, please do ask your questions. From tomorrow onwards, we will start giving notes of these sessions. There will be like brief summary notes of the entire session. But of course, in those notes, there will not be the stories and examples that I'm giving. That you might have to note it down. But the flow will be there. So from tomorrow onwards, every day you'll get notes so they can revise and come back. And as I said, the registrations are open till tomorrow. Those who would like to invite some of your friends or relatives, you're most welcome to invite them by tomorrow. We have some of our old members who have been coming to our program for many years now. Some of you can just stand up. Leela, you can stand up. Shileka Mataji, Deepika Mataji, Vasundhara Mataji, Pankaj Jay. So these are all people who have been coming for many years to our programs. You can just connect with them. You know, I'm also here. I'm also there to talk to y'all. But they are also available. You can just talk to them, ask the experiences, share with them, and develop friendship with them. Very grateful to all of y'all. See y'all tomorrow. Thank you very much.